interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you. And it is a Monday, April Fool's Day edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. No fooling around. Ben Love and the famous Clint D coming at you, taking you home for the next 3 hours. And we are chock full of guests today, a little bit lesser so, in hour number one. You know I have to lead off with the end of LSU's basketball season and what promises to be the beginning of an interesting, if not tumultuous, stretch. I'll give you plenty of my takes. We've got space for yours as well. Let's talk early and often today while we can. We'll have more guests later in today's program. 706-0111, the number to play. And for the next 3 hours, Clint and I will be inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. I was wrong Friday out at Twin Peaks on Johnston. I told you it was widely expected, and I think this was conventional wisdom. LSU, a great first half team under Tony Benford, would come out of the gate strong, that they would blitz Michigan State, get them on their heels, and then the Spartans probably would have their strongest push after halftime. Didn't go down that way. In fact, LSU went down 8-0 early. Heck, by this point, we're almost, 72 hours removed from the game? You saw it. You know it. It went against LSU quickly, and it rolled downhill, avalanche style. A quick flurry before the half, a deep Trey Waters three, and that's a lot of what got LSU back to within four in the second half, but ultimately it was fool's gold, and a magical season for LSU basketball comes to an end. And I do want to give some credit. Now that we're on the back end of this thing, there's something that needs to be said, and if I haven't said it enough, then shame on me, because here are the facts outside of a lot of speculation. The facts are this. While it's easy to get lost in the Will Wade story, it's one of the most entrancing we've had in college basketball in a long, long time. FBI, NCAA, employer, employee, not talking to one another, having to give messages through the media to one another. We've never really seen anything quite like this. So it's easy to get lost in that. But the fact is this. I used the word tumultuous earlier. During easily the most tumultuous LSU basketball season of this generation, and I would venture to say ever. Sparky Wade and some of the guys will let me know if I'm wrong there. I mean, how does it get more difficult than a teammate being slain within a couple of months leading into your season? And not just a teammate. I guess it wouldn't matter who passed away, but a guy who represented Baton Rouge, a guy who was childhood lifelong friends with Skylar Mays, who had his dad play LSU basketball, whose former coach, Johnny Jones, is literally his cousin. So to transition, or try to transition from everything that happened with Wade Sims to losing your coach and this huge public storm cloud that just gathers around your program, for this team, with Tony Benford at the helm and a lot of young players, to get as far as they did, pretty damn impressive. And so, again, if at times in the last few weeks I and we on the program have lost sight of that, shame on us. But I want to give some kudos to those kids. They ran up against a buzzsaw. And if you watched Duke Michigan State yesterday, you're shaking head up down right now. That Michigan State team and their wunderkind point guard, Cassius Winston, they look every bit of a world beater right now. Now, I do think they'll have their hands full with Texas Tech. More on that later in the program. One of the oddest Final Fours you'll ever see. And yet the familiar face, Tom Izzo and Michigan State, they look really, 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 really good right now. And yes, we've had several callers to the show. that as soon as the brackets came out, they said, Ben, mark my words, Michigan State will beat Duke. All of you were right. And LSU's season has come to an end. 28 wins. 16-2 in the SEC, outright regular season champs. So, you know, here's one thing I'll tell you. And this was part of the program Friday, but I'll bring it back and run it back for you right now. I want you to think about this. LSU spring football has been at it now for, well, that's just it. I don't even know. And I'm not even being a wise ass. I don't even know because I haven't been at the Ponderosa. We're not getting daily updates from people covering spring football quite simply because it's April and we're still talking LSU basketball. They made it relevant again. And naturally, that leads me to their head coach that made things super relevant. He did it with his recruiting. He did it with the team last year that had no business being 500 in the SEC, and yet they were. And he did it by getting them into overdrive in this season, an even more talented group. Even more of his shopping goods that are lining the cabinets, right? Now, did he do it legally? Did he shop at the right store? Should he have had a surrogate go to the store for him? Those are all very fair questions. And it leads us into what's going to be an incredibly interesting time in LSU sports. Now, here's the part where I don't toe the company line. And you know me. If I don't want to, because I don't believe I should, I won't. I don't understand for the life of me if indeed Will Wade is going to be fired, why he hasn't been yet. I don't get that. I know a lot of LSU fans are going to stay by Wade in this. It's an emotional reaction. But here's the thing. I understand why he's not talking to LSU. He's corroborating and cooperating with the feds right now. He can't. He can't talk to LSU. But they can't do a couple of things past this season that's now over to hurt themselves for future seasons. They can't. LSU, number one, lose out on some of these kids that are on the current team because – you know what? We're just going to big chill until April 22nd or whenever that trial actually ends. Because don't forget, April 22nd, 3 weeks from today, is when it begins. And so, while a lot of people suspect Naz Reid, Trey Waters, Gall Pecan might have professional futures and are ready for it, that's one thing. But what about Javonte Smart, Emmett Williams, Darius Days? What about some of those cats that were pretty darn important on one of the best LSU basketball teams ever? Are they going to stick around? I don't think LSU can wait to find out if they want to keep some of those nucleus players intact from this 2018-19 nucleus. But the other thing LSU cannot do, in my opinion, is play the waiting game on maybe needing, oh, I don't know, a new freaking head coach until the end of April? Are you kidding me? Do you know how basketball work gets done when it comes to filling spots? Not just head coaching roles, assistant jobs, director of basketball ops jobs. The summit for that bad boy is this coming weekend in Minneapolis. Everyone who is anyone in the college basketball game is there. Hell, a lot of people that are anyone in the NBA game are there because they're going fishing in the same pond for some of these coaches. And already, Alabama's got their guy, the hot shot from Buffalo. A&M, Arkansas, I don't think that train's going to be too much later from docking into the station. It would be an absolute crime against college sports humanity if LSU waited until late April and then realized maybe we need to go get a new head coach. Trust me, no one's taking that job then. Nobody that you want, nobody that can potentially withstand what could be, we don't know for sure, but could be probation. And so for me, I've been working under an assumption for a while, just based off of good common sense and some of what I've been hearing, that somewhere between 24 and 48 hours after LSU's season came to an end, LSU would split ways with Wade. And that they, in their minds, and maybe even factually, could prove that they had just cause for termination. Now, whether or not that's true because the audio, the actual wiretap surrounding Javonte Smart hasn't been released, it's just a reporter and a report, that's yet to be seen. Whether actual dollars have to change hands for LSU to somehow make this problem go away, that's yet to be seen. But I promise it won't be a $10 million buyout. They ain't going down that road. They had a hard time pulling that trigger for less miles after everything that happened. Hell, they like this guy. But I think the end is coming. Why it's not here just yet, boy, that baffles me. And if we're doing this program again tomorrow and LSU is still, again, hanging, chilling, in purgatory, they are further damaging their chances at keeping some of these players, potentially even future recruits, although the 2019 class isn't what the 2018 bunch was. And they might put themselves as far behind the eight ball as is humanly possible when it comes to getting a new head coach. Can't imagine Tony Benford's going to be that guy. For quite some time now, it's been my working assumption Will Wade won't be that guy. Why we're doing this show Monday afternoon and there's still no news there, boy, that's head-scratching to me. And so while everybody wants to get rid of Olivan Alexander because they suspended the guy when you think it was the wrong time, my biggest problem with Oliva has always been he doesn't take the action when he's supposed to. And I know what the irony is. He took action when nobody thinks he should have. But if LSU and Wade are going to part ways, this isn't something that you can afford to wait on. All right, big, big show today, and that means big-time guest. At 4:30, about 17 minutes from right now, we're scheduled to have a chat with former STM Cougar and LSU Tiger Jamie Howard. We do want to go behind the ropes at the Ponderosa. Want to get a little bit from people who have seen Joe Burrow, Miles Brennan, and then Joe Brady teaming up with Steve Ensminger and that offense. So everything works out, we'll have Jamie Howard with us. Our only guest of hour number one at 4:30. At 5:15, Ruff and Rodrigue. At 5:30, Jace Conrad. Got to talk some UL Raging Cajun baseball. And how about this? If you ever give up on the show in the third hour, well, you're doing it wrong. But there's a reason today. You need to make sure you're dialed in. At 6 o'clock, fresh off of a trip to the nation's capital, Glenn Gilbo talking LSU basketball. And at 6:15, excited to run down our man, Galen Alexander, formerly Bro Bridge High School, LCA. He just led Jones County Junior College to a huge 2019 season, and he's now a Georgetown basketball commit. Excited to have Galen back on BTBS at 6:15. We're coming right back in, taking your phone calls. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and you're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Well, we're going to take it one day at a time. Obviously, we don't know what's going on, and we're just going to keep doing what we've been doing, stay in the gym, and pretty much talk to our families and see what the next step is.
Tremont Waters in the direct aftermath of LSU's loss to Michigan State. He's not the only one, Trey. I don't think that a lot of people know what's going on right now. Bumper to Bumper Sports back in on 103.7 The Game. Told you we're going to take your phone calls. Let's start right now. Out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Ron, thank you for waiting through the break. What you got today?
How you doing, Ben? Yeah, I just wanted to make a few comments and a question to you. As far as Will Wade, well, I got three things, actually. As far as Will Wade, I wasn't the biggest fan of him when they hired him. I was kind of warming up to him. But there's no doubt he put that team together, so he deserves all the credit for that, you know. But as far as Joe Oliva done exactly the right thing, you know. And anybody who can't understand that never sat on his side of the desk before. You have to have a certain amount of control over the people work for you. And he did exactly what he should have done. Anybody who understands that, like I said, they never sat on that side of that desk before.
And Ron, I'll take it a step further because I agree with you, right? Yeah. You can't allow one employee to do that because then everybody can. But more than that, in this case, it's a liability thing. If you put yourself in a position where you can't prove institutional control, where you actually willfully show a lack of institutional control, then the whole kingdom can crumble. So he had to do this. My question now is that the season's over. What exactly do you think it is they're waiting on?
I have inside information, but I would assume that maybe he's making sure all his T's going to be crossed and the I's going to be dotted. And
right.
You know, if they do fire him, he has to, his biggest interest is LSU. So he has to protect LSU. So, and like I said, that's another thing with being on that side of the desk. You know, you can't knee-jerk, and you got to make sure you have control of your situation and protect who you're working for, you know. And I can understand that, you know. And my next question is, what you think about, I asked you this a few weeks ago, what would be, how would you look at it, maybe Eric Musselman, you know, LSU going after Eric Musselman when all this does happen? Because I just don't see where he comes back, you know.
Ron, I agree. And you know what? I'll run down a few names that I think a lot of people have been circulating. And I haven't thrown them out on this program because I got to a point where I said, you know what? People probably would like to talk about this exciting tournament run. But the names that are out there, Ron, thanks for the call, man. So let's discuss. And then we'll take more calls. 706-0111. Eric Musselman would be a phenomenal hire at LSU. There are a few reasons why I'm not sure that's going to happen. Now, what's interesting, I've assumed for a while, the word has been that he eyes a Pac-12 job. The guy was the head coach of the Warriors, the Kings. He's at Nevada. He's been a West Coast dude lately, right? And what is fascinating to me is that Cal hired Mark Fox and that was delivered to them by a search firm. God bless the people in this day and age that are still hiring people based off of a search firm. All the best to you. Joe Oliva came to LSU from a search firm. All the best if a computer is telling you who you need to hire at this point. Because Mark Fox, his tenure at Georgia, I just don't see how that merits that he got that job. Point being this, that's one less job that Musselman can get in the Pac-12. UCLA would be a pretty logical conclusion. The other thing I've heard on Mus in the SEC, the way that he likes to go after the transfer market, in particular the JUCOs, it doesn't always jive with how things typically get done in the SEC. Again, maybe there are some regulations, some standards in the conference that wouldn't make this one the most appealing to him. That's just what I've heard. Some of the other names that have been floating around, should LSU be replacing a head coach, Johnny Dawkins. I'm not sure about that one either, just because I think the guy's stock is soaring right now. If you look at what he did with Taco Fall and UCF, you also look at his history, and we'll see if Johnny Dawkins, a former Dukie, wants to repeat it. Player, longtime assistant for Coach K, again at Duke, prestigious academic institution. He was the head coach at Stanford, prestigious academic institution. Can you think of a job in the SEC that might fit that bill? Here's my point. I would imagine probationless Vandy might feel a little more appealing to Johnny Dawkins in LSU, which has a bit of a storm cloud. Don't know what players are staying. Don't know what's going on. Maybe with your AD, with your chancellor, the whole probation thing. I'm just not sure. Now, you still need to make a run at Johnny Dawkins, 100%. I just don't know that happens in the event that Wade is gone. The name I'll continue to throw out there, and I know there are some health concerns surrounding this man, but I will tell you that LSU could do a whole lot worse than Coach Kennedy that was recently at Texas A&M. So we're not talking Andy Kennedy, who was at Ole Miss, although something suggests to me he might get the itch after a year out of the game on TV to try to come back in. But I think if you look, and again, Clint, you're going to have to help me here. I'm losing my mind, doing too many things at once. Look it up on the Google machine. His first name, for whatever reason, has absolutely escaped me right now. I've interviewed him 5 to 10 times in my life, so shame on me. But Coach Kennedy, who was at Texas A&M, he's been the head coach at Southeastern in this state before. This is a guy with some pretty sincere Louisiana roots. And again, if the probation may have to take on some turbulent waters, I think you're going to have to promise somebody 5 or 6 years at this point. Might not be a bad guy to hitch the wagons to, but he was recently released by Texas A&M. I've given you at least 40 seconds of the Google machine,
Billy
sir.
Kennedy.
Thank you. Billy Kennedy. Getting old, dude. I forget names at this point.
Yeah, like I said, I was trying to, like when you said Kennedy, I'm like, I was almost 99% sure it was Billy, and I was like, I have to Google this to figure
now,
out.
Now, our Kentucky fans will say they don't want any more Billy the Kid, but it's a long time removed, and that would be a name that I would at least consider. All right, I'll tell you what we'll do. We had this segment planned for Sink or Swim. I at least need to get the question out there. Ron just had a really good thread, and he got me picking at it for a while. Kudos to you, Ron. But let's introduce the question. We could start to answer it now, and then later this hour, we'll pick it back up.
Exciting and new.
Your sink or swim question of the day. Who are you most concerned LSU will lose? Is it number one, Will Wade? Number two, Tremont Waters? Number three, Naz Reid? Or number four, we listed it this way on Twitter because you only get four options, other, and you can explain that. And I do think that other, a lot like your boy, Brewster's Millions, other, kind of like none of the above, might be a realistic choice here. And I'll explain that in a moment. But which one are you going with, Clint?
I'm going with Tremont Waters because he's definitely a guy who I felt like has been a real leader for this team during the turbulent times they've had to deal with over the last month or so, especially with the suspension of Will Wade playing the SEC tournament, and then also in March Madness, kind of helping out this interim coaching staff, if you will. I'm not going to just throw it all on Tony Benford because it definitely was an entire team effort when you look at that coaching staff, all kind of working as one unit. So I think that Tremont Waters as a leader, that's a huge loss for LSU.
I actually can make a strong case for other because I get to define my terms there. I think Wade dug his own grave in this instance. And like Ron said, it is my opinion as well that LSU has had no recourse since a lot of this news has hit the fan. The only thing LSU's athletic administration has done wrong, in my opinion, they could have done a lot more due diligence since October. But I'm not going down that rabbit hole with you right now. Wade, I think, has dug his own grave in this situation. Reed was always going to be a one and done, a mentality that wasn't going to be reversed. Waters, I think, had it in his mind after year one that he wanted to go. Remember, tested the proverbial waters, but didn't hire an agent. I think he's dead set on going as well. I just kind of always assumed that you would lose both guys. I am probably the most concerned with others because others for me are Javonte Smart, Darius Days, Emmett Williams. You could build the future of the program off of those guys, but they have to be here for you to do that. Think on that. We'll come back and discuss it on the other side if we don't get our next guest. He's a busy man, but we're planning to hook up with Jamie Howard when we return. We'll talk a little LSU, perhaps some STM Cougar football as well. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back on 103.7 The Game.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Well, I had never thought of it that way.
But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Here we go, and yeah, like any good football program, offense, we know how to audible. We're ready to do so. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. Jamie Howard needs a little bit longer. No problem. We'll get him in the next segment. So at 4:45, we'll bring on the former STM Cougar and LSU Tiger. That means we've got open phone lines right now. 706-0111. A few things I could tell you while we're waiting. First off, Paul Menieri has announced his pitching rotation. LSU baseball, two games in the midweek this week. Tomorrow night, 6:30, first pitch, 6 o'clock is the pregame show. Clay Moffitt will get the pill, and Menieri has made it very clear he would like Moffitt to extend in this one. So they're doing anything they can, coming off of 2 wins out of 3 with the offense really, I think, making a ruckus. Wasn't that nice? An outburst, 21 runs in the final two games with the offense coming to life with a series win at Mississippi State. They've got a really good A&M team coming to Baton Rouge this weekend. They'd like to have all arms on deck. And so Clay Moffitt will start tomorrow night against Grambling. Again, Coach Paul Menieri would like him to extend in that outing. On Wednesday, everything moves up 30 minutes. 5:30 pregame, 6 o'clock first pitch. Mikhail Hilliard will get another opportunity. Not exactly getting the same type of verbiage from CPM there, right? Menieri not saying we need Hilliard to extend. I think it's understood that the sophomore is still ramping back up a little bit. He needs to get that looper, the Uncle Charlie, back into form before they have him going 4 or 5-plus innings. So LSU baseball all week long. We'll have him right here on Acadiana Sports Station. Clint, you will correct me if I'm wrong. Of that I have absolutely no doubt. Almost 4 years tells me as much. Astros all week long will be in our sister station. That includes tonight's ball game.
Yeah, that includes tonight's ball game. Starting things off first of a 3-game set against the Texas Rangers, you have Brad Peacock on the mound tonight for the Astros.
And so 7:10, I believe, the first pitch there, 6:35.
Correctamundo.
The pregame show. Again, it's going to be on the Rewind, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM in Lafayette, 104.1 in Lake Charles. Just program it in. Put it into your vehicle. If you're listening to 103.7, the Astros are playing baseball and they're not here. They'll be on those stations I just listed. All right, I want to get back around to the subject matter at hand, the one we led today's show off with. LSU's players, assistant coaches, and the framework put in place by Will Wade deserve a ton of credit for what is, I think, really, without argument, a top three team in the history of the program. 28 wins? I understand that you've had teams like the Miracle Group, Ricky Blanton and company in 86 that went to the Final Four. This was a better overall team. They didn't accomplish quite as much. Yes, we understand that. But 28 wins. Good night. In the modern game, they were right there with the Blue Bloods, and they beat a number of them. Kentucky, Tennessee, had a chance with Florida State, Houston, all teams that, again, were in the Sweet 16 or later. So a pretty magical run. But now it's going to lead, I believe, to some turbulent times. I continue to be surprised that Will Wade is still the head coach of this team, albeit in a definitely suspended one. It's been my working assumption that within 24 to 48 hours of LSU season ending, they would pull the trigger there, rip the Band-Aid off, and try and keep as many of these players as possible, go out and get a new head coach. It's almost impossible for me to believe that LSU, and this is the only phrase I know how to use, are they really dumb enough to wait until late April, when the market for head coaches has dwindled and shriveled up to just about nothing, and you run the risk of losing Reed Waters to the NBA, which probably would have happened anyway, or maybe Waters' case to the G League overseas. But you also might lose some of these kids that are looking for another opportunity. To me, it just baffles me. Again, there's no action being taken. That seems to be some of the MO from Joe Oliva that's been hard for me to swallow for going on, I don't know, 10 or 11 years now. All right, let's get out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. John is with us, and John wants to talk Elite Eight. It was as good a round of eight as I can remember, John.
Hey, Ben, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. Listen, you and Quinn do a fantastic job, man. Love your show.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Elite Eight. I agree with you 100%. One of the best ones I've seen. Auburn did an outstanding job when you look at their body of work in that tournament with Kentucky, Kansas, and North Carolina. Who do you like in the Final Four?
I think the winner of the Michigan State-Texas Tech game wins the championship, and maybe by a fairly decided amount, which in basketball could be 8 to 12 points, but the winner of Sparty versus Texas Tech, I think, will win it all. And I got to tell you, that game for me is a coin flip, John.
Yeah, well, I felt the same way after it was all said and done. I thought the same thing. Texas Tech and Michigan State, either one of those two teams wins it all.
Texas Tech held a pretty darn good Michigan team to like 40 points. That's the best defensive performance I can remember in a postseason game of magnitude, John, in a long, long time. Chris Beard is one of the most underrated coaches that we have in the country. Elite Eight, Final Four, and back-to-back seasons at a non-traditional power. So it's hard to bet against Michigan State right now, but I will tell you this. I'm getting the feeling that Auburn wins on the other side of the bracket. I just don't think they could beat either of the teams they'd come up against.
Yeah, and I would have to agree with that as well. I like Auburn against Virginia. The only problem I had was Purdue not beating Virginia.
Yeah. And they darn sure could have, if not for one of the best, most oddly executed missed free throws of all time.
You had to have four things go right on that play for it to happen.
And I'm out here trying to chew bubble gum and walk at the same time. John, I appreciate the call, man. I'm serious. Athleticism, it's a funny thing. Let's get back to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Ken, you want to talk Will Wade?
Yeah, first of all, yeah, it's going to be the Final Four. It's going to be spectacular. I had picked Michigan State versus North Carolina. Well, I lost on that end, but Michigan State, I think, will be in the finals. You talk about due diligence when you talk about Will Wade. I'm wondering, where was the due diligence before even hiring him to start with when they knew he had excess baggage already? So then we hire him. He does a great job, bring the school from the ash heaps into prominence, and but yet it's going to be all for naught. Now, how are you going to – I agree with you. They should hire a coach, like, effective immediately because you try to keep the, some of the players, you know, back for the program to keep their program going. But if that falls back, then we're going to be back into the abyss again.
That's correct. And you know what, Ken, I'll interject this, and I'll see what you think about it. One of the benefits of what LSU went through with Javonte Smart and his mother is that they had the NCAA looped in on that, and it was urgent, right? They had to get it done to get Javonte on the court and play right now. But here's what I would say. My gut tells me that that conversation with the NCAA at least opened the door for LSU to be able to entertain another head coach or a possible replacement for Will Wade and say, hey, due to some of the early cooperation we've had with the NCAA, we expect that X is what's coming. We want to hire you knowing that X is in mind. And maybe it's bad and maybe it ain't. But we want to hire you long-term knowing that X is coming. We've at least started to have these conversations, so there's not as much doubt as on the outside we all may think there is, Ken. That's kind of something else that's occurred to me in all this.
Right. And, you know, like I said, I'm proud of the Tigers. You know, they made, at least made it to the Sweet 16. So I'm proud of that. But, you know, we got this cloud that we got to get rid of. We got to get rid of the cloud and see, you know, who, how many players are going to stay. And then, of course, the ones that's going to the NBA, they, like you say, they're going anyway. So, but anyway, thank you for taking my call.
Ken, you got it. And Ken was absolutely one of our guys who said Michigan State will beat Duke. He called it Babe Ruth style. Let's get back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. T, thank you for waiting. You want to go in on our sink or swim question?
Yeah. Hey, Ben, when you asked it, you know, when Clint answered Tremont Waters, I agreed with him. And then you answered other. And then I started thinking, I said, well, you know what, he's right too. So I came to the conclusion that I think we screwed for a while, period.
I'm not quite resigned to that yet, and I got a few reasons why, T, but I'm a little concerned with the leadership currently in place that might have to make another program-altering decision. And, oh, by the way, it appears externally that they're waiting until now to start making this decision. I hope to the high heavens of basketball gods that they've been thinking about this and plotting this for the last few weeks. Because if you couldn't see this writing on the wall, you need to get Stevie Wonder in your corner, brother, because you can't see anything.
Hey, I got you, Ben. Hey, love your show, man. Keep it up.
That's the problem for me. Again, that's how it looks externally. My guess is they've been doing their internal due diligence for a while. There are a lot of smart people in that building. Trust me, I know them. I know you don't feel that way about the one guy with the gray hair who many of you have put the bows of the clown, Roger Goodell, you know, bulb on his nose, and you have shirts with him and emojis with him and all these fun things. But there are some other people in that building that I think you can trust. I don't want to completely dismiss them. But it looks on the outside right now as if they're beginning to have the wheels churn. They have needed to be churning for quite some time. All right, we'll be back in. Cross our fingers. Hopefully Jamie Howard with us when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield,
but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
All right, enough of the round ball for now. Let's talk some LSU football. Bumper to Bumper Sports returns on 103.7 The Game, and excited to have our next guest back aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, former STM Cougar, LSU Tiger, Jamie Howard with us. How are you, Jamie?
Good, man. How are you?
Look, I'm doing well. Just a couple of months ago that we were sitting at the Hyatt Regency in New Orleans before, I guess what, one of the best high school football games in a long time?
I agree. It was one of the best I've ever seen.
STMU High. We'll talk about the Cougars maybe a little later in the interview, but you know what's funny is that a quarterback will always recognize a great offensive line. I know you've been out to the Ponderosa at least once, and you've told me off air that you've seen a great offensive line for Steve Ensminger and LSU coming into this 2019 season.
Yeah, man, I was really excited after seeing that group work together. It was very athletic and tough, and you know, I think it was some of the young guys that were playing last year that just matured a lot. It's gonna be fun for them to watch. Fun to watch them this year.
And we know that they had a really good coach. He's out at BYU now. They replaced him with James Craig, a guy that comes in with all kind of NFL experience, developmental. How much can that mean, not only to recruit kids to campus, but in, I guess, what they actually produce on the field?
Well, I think it's going to make a huge difference. I'm telling you, these guys, they look very confident out there. I know they had some guys hurt on the D-line, but when the practice I went to, the offensive line completely dominated the D-line. So that was nice to see, because usually in the spring it's the opposite. And it was, as an offensive guy, you enjoy seeing that.
Jamie Howard, our
especially
guest.
As a quarterback, yeah.
Well, let's talk about those quarterbacks. And we'll begin mm-hmm. with Miles Brennan, because I know you've told me that he looks a little different to you. I guess, how would you say that? How would you kind of explain that?
Well, he looks much more mature. He looks thicker. And his arm strength was pretty phenomenal. And he looked very accurate. But, you know, Burroughs is obviously seems to be the team leader out there. And it was kind of funny. Burroughs seems to be like a linebacker playing quarterback, because a little bit that I watched, he got into a scuffle with one of the linebackers. And it was funny to see Brennan had his back, jumped in too. I was like, man, that's a little scary. But it's fun to see those guys all fighting for each other out there, you know.
How much can things change year one to year two as a starter, just in what you mean to your team and how much they buy into everything you say?
Well, man, listen, what I saw out there and then saw at the end of the season, that bowl game, I mean, that team believes in Burroughs and how tough he is. And, you know, I think from a year to year, I think you're going to see a huge difference in our offense. I mean, I watched them throw it around a little bit more than I saw him last year in that one spring practice. It seems like they're going to open up a little bit more. But, man, just the confidence coming from that side of the ball, it's really fun to see right now.
And we always hear about how fast Dave Aranda's defense looks this time of year. Always manifests itself as well come the fall. What did you see out of those guys? Maybe just a snapshot of the defense.
Well, I was watching the young DB. You know, he's super talented, Stingley. And, you know, he looked like a young guy out there a couple times. But, man, he made some plays with he's got great hips, and he reacts very fast to the ball. But you just got a lot of talent back there. And you know, I mostly paid attention to to the DB side, because I was watching a lot of one-on-ones. But man, they have a lot of talent out there, as usual.
When you look at this year's schedule, an opportunity for LSU to go to Texas, what does that make you think of? Some of the trips that you were able to take, obviously in conference. I mean, we know all of those, you know, cathedrals that LSU plays at. But some of the best places you played at college.
Oh man, let's see. Our first game every year I was there was A&M, and it was when they were probably at a peak of their program level. So I mean, it was fun to play there. It was rough, but you start out the season with a place like that at A&M, and the stadium's gotten a lot better since I played at it last time. I think I played, it was so hot on that turf that my shoes melted, but it was a fun place to start the season off. So I don't even know the schedule. We start off at Texas, or
week two on the road.
Oh wow, that's gonna be great.
Yeah, I think it's one of the best they've had in a while. Before we let you go, Jamie, I do want to talk a little bit about St. Thomas More. We mentioned the championship game against U High. What are some of the things that Jim Hightower's team will be doing to try to get back there and take the next step in 2019?
Well, I'll tell you, they're going to be really good. Caleb Holstein had a phenomenal year, and he's just going to be even better this year. You know, one thing about STM is with Lance Struther there, they're always going to get the receivers to be the best route runners and maximize their abilities. And you'll see new kids step up and on the receiver side, probably like Jack Besh, who, you know, his uncle is my roommate in college. The kid's going to be, he's going to be incredible. My nephew, Luke Howard at tight end, you'll see him much more involved this year, I would think. And they're going to be really tough. They're going to be really good.
How can it make your son Walker Howard better to continue to be pushed by Caleb Holstein? That's, to me, it's such a cool dynamic they've got on campus. Mm-hmm. As you witness it, what's it like?
Well, it's incredible, because Caleb's such a good kid, and he's a great influence on my son. And you know, and vice versa, my son, I think, makes Caleb better, because anytime there's competition like that, it makes you not get complacent, and it makes you work hard. So it's great. I mean, they're two different type of quarterbacks, so it's it's fun. They both challenge each other. They get along great, and it's really a great dynamic.
Hey, look, it's fun, April 1, to be talking a little high school football, right? And I was having a conversation.
When you have a kid in high school, you're always talking about high school football.
Well, here's where I'm leading you to, man. I had a conversation with some fans of the Cougars earlier today, and I started to say maybe there's an opportunity. You see somebody like Evangel now in your classification in the Dome, and they quickly jerked my chain and said, Ben, that game could be at Cougar Field. That game could be at Cajun Field.
Oh,
I completely forgot
right.
about that, man. It could be at Shreveport. You don't know.
Yeah, what a mess, man. It's really sad what this has come to now. And, you know, it's sad that, you know, you can play one tough game and be in a championship game now these days. It's not the same, but it's good for the kids, I guess. They enjoy it.
Well, we got to keep talking it all year long. Now we know that you are, and so we'll keep that kind of in our court as well for the entire year. Jamie, thanks for the time today. I know it's been a busy schedule. Thanks for making some time for us.
All right, thank you guys. Bye.
Jamie Howard. I mean, how about that? Takes off one cap with Howard Risk Advisors, puts another one on, slides right into a little LSU football conversation. And here's what I will tell you. Here's my end-of-the-hour tease, and we'll pick it back up at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. I do intend to come back around to LSU football. I'll also give you some of my thoughts on the Final Four to begin hour number two. But the other thing that I heard this weekend, somebody that was out at the Saturday practice that was a little bit more of a scrimmage toward the end. You're seeing the Saints offense run by LSU. It's more simplified. It's something that 18 to 20-year-olds can grasp, in particular in the spring. But I couldn't help but get a little bit of the Coach Herman Boone feeling from Remember the Titans. And I've used this analogy on the show before. It felt like it's like Novocaine, right? Coach, there's only six plays here. It's like Novocaine. Give it time. It'll work. What I heard is that things were very simplistic but effective this weekend. Again, is everyone tackling to the ground? Is it always ones-on-ones? Can it be situational at times? Yeah, look, all those things are variables. I get that, right? I know that occasionally they're working on red zone. They're working on tight zone. I know that. It's not an exact roll the ball out there, play a game type of feel. I know that. But what I hear is that they have some more of the Saints principles that Joe Brady helped put in with Sean Payton in New Orleans or helped to refine in the Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara era, and that you're seeing that right now at LSU. Am I promising you a revolution on offense? No. Am I telling you that they're going to streamline some things and be more effective when they run the ball? They'll still be physical, but they'll be more effective in doing it. They'll be less predictable. Yeah, I am telling you that. And with a starting quarterback entering year two at the helm in Joe Burrow, I think they're going to be better on that side of the football. What Jamie Howard had to say on the offensive line probably gives you a little more faith in that direction as well. More on that as we begin hour number two, but there's only one way we know how to wrap up hour one.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Momentum, and I do believe LSU baseball wrestled a good bit of it away this weekend at the Dude. I did my entire weekly reboot podcast on the subject. In a nutshell, I will tell you that Eric Walker's start was the most encouraging thing in the last month for this program. But it's great to see, despite the 41 strikeouts at the plate, it's great to see LSU baseball hitting, scoring runs, and winning on the road. At least for now, they've got some momentum back in their corner. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're coming right back in. You're dialed in to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. Ben Love checking in with the famous Clint D as we take you home on this April Fool's Day Monday. Bumper to Bumper Sports. Having fun on 103.7 The Game. It's no laughing matter, though. We're always with you from inside the 237 Roof Studios. No job too big or too small. Just call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. Busy second hour coming at you. At the end of this segment, I will announce our ARDCO Equipment Student Athletes of the Month, selected for the month of March. We've got one young man, young woman. I'll have that for you here a little less than 10 minutes from right now. At 5:15, thereabouts, Ruffin Rodri coming aboard. At 5:30, Jace Conrad, former Lafayette High Mighty Lion, UL Ragin' Cajun. Robe and company have their work cut out for them. Lost 2 of 3 on the road this weekend. How will they rebound, and who are some of the team leaders this team has to count on moving forward? We'll ask Jace Conrad those questions and more at 5:30. And Clint, it's almost a crying shame to throw shade as late in the hour as we are today. I'd like to do it right now, but I'll wait until about 5:45 because we are doubly hashtag blessed today with the shade. Something I saw yesterday while watching the Auburn-Kentucky game, I just can't shake from it. I mean, I can't get it out of my brain, so I'll share that as we throw a little shade at the end of this hour. But let's lead off talking about the Final Four, and we can go back in on LSU football, spring football as well. You want to play? We got time. 706-0111. As for the last four standing, I think you've got a little more power slanted toward the Texas Tech-Michigan State matchup. I do believe the winner of that one takes it all a week from tonight up in Minneapolis. I look at the other side, and I see jersey confusion. If you've ever played Madden, you know what I'm talking about. You ever played college football, NCAA? May God rest its soul, EA football. Then yes, you know what I'm talking about. Auburn, Virginia, same color scheme. Very different types of basketball, though. Auburn doesn't mind getting up and down. They had a couple of 20-plus point scores yesterday, and they beat Kentucky in a game that mattered for the second time in less than 3 weeks. You've got my attention, Bruce Pearl, Auburn. I was incredibly impressed with what I saw yesterday. Beat them in the SEC title game in Nashville. Beat them in the regional final in Kansas City, Missouri. Very impressive what they accomplished. And I do think Auburn, for me, I would take them to beat Virginia at this point. I know I've been a Virginia hater. I'm really not sure how they're still in it at this point. Purdue had that thing on ice. And then here's how I put it earlier. One of the best executed and still oddest missed free throws I've ever seen, right? Missed the free throw, back tap, into the backcourt. You got to go all the way back into the front court, and then an elbow extended jumper, splash at the gun, and Virginia forces overtime. And from there, a little bit of what Bill Simmons used to refer to as the guillotine loss. Yeah, once it starts to fall on you, it's kind of hard to reverse the momentum of that guillotine. And it ruined what was a 40-plus point night from Carson Edwards. And so, yes, make no mistake about it, that was the best Elite Eight we've seen in a hot minute. And I know we're always prisoners of the moment, but consider the OT game. We just went down that road, right? Virginia-Purdue, one of the wildest finishes that you'll see. Kentucky-Auburn, overtime. Michigan State, Duke, the underdog wins, and again, it goes down just about to the gun. That play in the corner with, who was it, Barrett, Matt McQuaid, who's it out off of, who gets another chance? Incredible. Michigan State splashes a three when they have to. Duke can't come up with a big shot. All-time Hall of Fame coaches on both sides. Amazing. Really, the worst game of the four to produce the Final Four was Texas Tech just doing clinical Texas Tech things against Gonzaga. So a remarkable round of eight. Now we've got four. My gut tells me that whoever wins out of Michigan State and Texas Tech takes the national title, and maybe by maybe by close to, if not, in fact, in double digits with the victory. Texas Tech is rolling at this point, and Michigan State is starting to feel like a team of destiny themselves. That's going to be the tougher of the two matchups as we begin the Final Four Saturday in Mini. All right, LSU football. For those that just got in the vehicle at 5 o'clock, those that are just joining us, or even if you need a refresher, we had Jamie Howard aboard. He had the chance to go out to practice not long ago. Co-signed what we've been hearing from Coach O and some of the staff so far, that Miles Brennan does look a little more filled out, that the accuracy appears better, but that there's no doubt in his mind the leader is Burrow. There's not competition, but there's a second stringer who's gotten bigger and better. That's great. That helps. Push Joe Burrow by all means. Because, by the way, let's not forget there has to be life after Burrow one day. But Jamie Howard said that it almost feels like Burrow is a linebacker starting at quarterback. Got into it at the scrimmage he was at, a little scrappy with some of the defenders. Awesome. Jamie Howard also telling us that the offensive line looks outstanding, and that's step one. Because as good as LSU was running the football last year, when we didn't always expect it, right, preseason, Nick Brissett, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, can that group get it done? They did. And now minus Brissett, you're going to have to plug in some new pieces. John Emery Jr., we all kind of suspect. Maybe a couple of other youngsters get to tote the rock a little bit. Ty Davis, along with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, we'll see. But a really good offensive line cures a lot of what ails you. So that was a great report to get from Jamie Howard. What I mentioned at the end of hour number one, I am hearing that LSU is diligently working on installing a lot of the same principles that the New Orleans Saints use. This shouldn't surprise anybody. Ensminger and LSU staff went to go study the Saints in person before last season. Now they've hired Joe Brady, an assistant under Sean Payton, to help out with Ensminger. And again, what I heard this weekend is that they have installed some of the basic principles the Saints do. And that LSU's offense, at least right now, it ain't very complicated, but it looks awfully effective. And so Brady, who was instrumental in helping to orchestrate what the Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas era Saints have looked like, bringing some of those same fundamentals to LSU. And the really cool part about it, you know that Brady was an important part of helping script and design some of what Taysom Hill was able to do. There's at least a little bit of Taysom Hill in Joe Burrow. We've all seen that. The edge, the toughness, the willingness to run. And so LSU's offense, slowly but surely, might be rounding into modern era form. For many of you, it'll feel like 8 to 10 years too late. It's at least 2 years too late, right? This is kind of what you expected when Matt Canada, if I could still say that name out loud, when that guy was hired. Here we are 2 years later, and they're starting to do some things that are successful at the NFL level. That is one heck of a start. All right, it is my pleasure now, as we end our opening segment in hour number two, I can announce the inaugural Student Athlete of the Month award winners. We've got one young man, one young woman, and they're both being presented by Ardco Equipment. What we'll do is this. I'll announce our winners right now, and we do have some goodies. We'll connect with the winners. We'll put a story up. We're excited to get in contact with the following. Ladies first, of course. Congratulations go out to Alexis Boutte, a catcher on the softball team at St. Martinville High School. And if it's pronounced Boutte, I'll be corrected. Won't be the first or last time. But congratulations to Alexis. She received multiple nominations, actually. A well-rounded softball player who shows good sportsmanship, excels in both academics and sports, an amazing catcher. And we'll have more for Alexis shortly. You'll see that at 1037thegame.com. But congratulations again, Alexis Boutte, a catcher on the St. Martinville High School softball team. She is our female student athlete of the month of March, as awarded by Ardco Equipment. On the guys' side of things, and I have seen this young man play on the gridiron a couple of times, a multi-sport athlete. Congratulations go out to Darian Richard, a senior at Rain High School. Plays football, baseball, track. A fantastic athlete and an honor student, per the nomination. Passionate about sports, has been the captain of both the Wolves' football and baseball teams. and I have it on good authority, that Darren Richard going to Southeastern Louisiana, Hammond America, baby, to play linebacker as a walk-on for the Lions. So, again, congratulations to our March Student Athletes of the Month on 103.7 The Game. It's presented by Ardco Equipment, and it's Alexis Boutte, softball player from St. Martinville High School, and Darren Richard, multi-sport standout from Rain High School. All right, let's take our first break. When we return, a man who always stands out, Ruffin Rodrigue. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
We're going back to our regular show.
All right, this is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 1037thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 1037 The Game.
Here we go, right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. It's Monday, a shade or two after 5:15. That means we got to bring aboard Ruffin Rodrigue, owner of Ruffino's on the River. Ruffin, please tell me, as we bring you back in, you got a chance to watch some of the Dynamite basketball this weekend.
We did, man. Ben, I'm telling you, something happened in my household. My 11-year-old son he can shoot out of, you know, he's got a good shot. He beats me at everything. I mean, he can, you know. I feel like I'm rooming with Tommy Hodson again. I'm trying to beat him at basketball. He beat me like 32-0 in a one-on-one time, and my son's doing the same thing. So he's big into basketball, which makes my wife big into basketball. She's never been big into any kind of sports. So I got my 8-year-old daughter watching. They're all into it. One of them's pulling for Duke, one of them's pulling for Michigan State. You know, they were yelling. It was great. It was really a lot of fun because I haven't gotten to college basketball since they've started the one and done thing. I really haven't enjoyed it that much because you don't get to build a romance with them like you did with Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, and all the years of watching all the LSU players play, Chris Jackson and Ricky Bland, and all, become juniors and seniors. And but the one and done thing has really turned it off for me. But for some reason, watching Michigan State with the juniors and seniors was a lot of fun.
It was. But I got to tell you, you just gave me an interesting idea. Who were some of the guys that you went to college with, in particular played football with, that could do it on the hardwood? Because you mentioned Tommy Hodson. That's not the first time I've heard that he could ball.
Yeah. See, I grew up in Thibodaux, and Tommy went to Central if he was from Lockport. And we, before I met Tommy, he was a legend on the Biddy basketball court, scoring 40, 50, 60 points a game and just had this unbelievable shot. And then he grew into high school when I was in junior high, I played him for the first time and they brought him in at halftime. I think we were in seventh grade. We were up at half and he ended up beating us by 20. He was a true legend in basketball. He can hit it from everywhere. This is before the 3-point line. In high school basketball, he scored 29 points a game, and this is without a 3-point line. So you put a 3-point line, most of his shots were behind the arc. He would have scored up in the 38, 40 points a game in high school. So I tell us, and then he came to some phenomenal quarterback, and that's where his love was basketball. And I told him several times he should have, LSU was. Tell Tommy, man, you need to go out there, man. You could light it up. But we had, Willie Williams was a tight end, was a rebound, and he could have played. He had these long, six, had these long, long arms. We had several players that were really good in basketball. But Tommy by far was the one that, Todd Kinchin was, he actually went out for basketball his first year at LSU. And Todd was 6'1", but he can, He was a dunking machine as far as like the trick dunks and all that stuff. He can jump out of the gym and do all that crazy stuff. So he was another basketball player that was a football player that was great basketball, but nobody can. I mean, Hodson, I still today wish he would have gave college a shot because his range was spectacular.
I need to see that at this point now. Our guest is Ruffin Rodrigue on 103.7 The Game. I don't doubt it for one second. I wish I could have seen it growing up like you did.
And he can handle it. He can dribble. He can dribble. You know, he can shoot off the dribble. Tommy was special, you know, and but his football skills were just really, really touted. And when you have BYU at that time really coming after him hard, and Michigan, LSU, you know, it was a big deal. When Bill Unsparker signed him, that was his baby. And he wanted to start him as a true freshman, but he had a hurt elbow and he needed surgery. So he ended up redshirting and starting as a redshirt freshman and making all SEC 4 years.
Let's talk about LSU's starting quarterback right now. And it's my contention that a healthier Joe Burrow is going to run more in 2019. Do you agree?
Yes. Well, you saw that in the end of last year, the bowl game. They started to run him a little more, and you saw, wow, this guy can run. You know what happened? You know, a lot of players get tired towards the end of the season. You don't see the burst, and the really good ones you see that making all the plays. Those are the guys who have longevity during the season or in shape, that kind of thing. Because it's easy to get out of shape during the season. You know, if you don't work out and do all the things you're supposed to. But Joe Burrow's a workout freak. I mean, he's a film room guy. So they're gonna, you know, especially with Joe Brady and what they're doing. You know, I know a lot of people are gonna be like, oh, here we go again, another dynamic offense. It's gonna be all over the place. And you know, the head coach is gonna get a hold of it again and you know, run pass. But I think Ed is really being honest when Coach O says that he's finally got the offense that he really, really wants. And he wanted to tweak the past ones. But this one right now, I think, is what he really likes. He loves the run-pass option. He likes quarterbacks that can tuck it and run. You know, I don't know why they signed guys that are pure drop-back guys, which they have a couple on the roster, that can't run, because they're not going to fit in the system. I mean, it's like back to the Les Miles days when you went and got Anthony Jennings, you know, and you're running a pro style formation. You think Anthony Jennings is Zach Mettenberger, and it's just not the case. And that was just, you know, you get all these great receivers that can run routes and all that. You got to get the guys that fit your offense. I mean, No better than Clemson. Clemson knows who they are, what they do, and that's why they get all the best quarterbacks. You know, be one or the other, and you'll get the best, but don't go back and forth.
We got a few more moments with Ruff and Rodrigue. All right, brother, we're into April. The weather, for the most part, is starting to kind of, you know, get normalized and hot. What's it like out of Rufino's on the river?
Beautiful. I'm here today. It's putting in a new Wi-Fi music system. We're gonna have you know, the live music has just been on fire on Thursdays. We may have to stretch it out and put on some more nights. With the private parties on the patio, the events, the, you know, pharmaceutical parties. It's every night, and the patio is so beautiful, and the weather, and the cool weather, and the specials have been coming out fantastic. I had somebody today tell me that their meals have been so great. You know, really, the hot, we've been scaring people because I ordered another oven, and our plates, you know, the standards for Rufino's plates are, you know, hot food hot, cold food cold. And I really want those hot plates to come out because it stays warm throughout the meal. Even when you're talking and doing different things, you still, you know, get a hot bite. And people are noticing that. And it takes a little effort, a lot of broken plates and different things, but it's worth it.
Perfecting their craft at Rufino's on the River. Pretty good place, if I may say so, to stop in after Rhythms on the River on Thursdays. And starting next Friday, we'll be there with Ruffin doing live shows of Bumper to Bumper Sports. All right, I've been asked this question a few times in my career. I'm going to pose it to you. What is it that makes Tommy Moffitt so special and what he brings to this LSU football program?
Well, I think what he brings is what all the Gale Hatch disciples have done in college football. Gale Hatch is a buddy of my dad's at LSU. He's an Olympic strength coach and the whole deal. And Gale's the one that really brought to the forefront strength and training into college football the way it's done today. And Tommy's was one of the first ones. You know, the guy at Alabama's done it. I think he's got like 15 guys around the SEC and country, all trained under Gail Hatch from Baton Rouge. And Tommy Moffitt's one of the ringleaders. And it's just it's a fun approach to it. The players, you ask any player who's your favorite coach, they say Coach Moffitt. You know, when we do the walk down for the LSU former players deal, and I didn't play for Moffitt, so I wasn't a part of it, but all the players, especially the young players that are just getting into the walk down as a former player, they tackle Coach Moffitt every time. I mean, they get on top of him, and when he's walking in with a suit on to the game, they're like jumping on top of him, and that's that camaraderie that he has with them in the summertime, especially when they're doing the workouts. They become close, and he gets them to work and be their best. And that has a lot to do with it, because you want to be their friend, but you also want to let them know that you're going to take care of them, but they have to put the work in. It's a lot of work.
Hey, it's not work when we get together. We have fun every Monday. Look forward to doing this on Friday. But, Ruffin, enjoy your time over at Rufino's on the River. We'll come see you shortly.
Sounds good, Ben. You have a great day.
And you too. Think that guy's not having some fun over there? Tested some things out with the new oven? I love that. They continue to get better. Rufino's on the River. I tell people all the time, if you've been there, you've had the delicious steaks, you've had the Veal Michael that they named after Jared DiNardo's kid. You know the food is absolutely phenomenal. If you've never been there just to go to the bar or, in particular, for Sunday brunch, you're missing out. Rufino's on the River. One heck of a place to celebrate life. 921 Camellia Boulevard. When we return, Jace Conrad. We've missed him for a few weeks. How do the Cajuns get back on track? We ask him next. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
What happened this weekend and what's next for Cajuns baseball? Get the latest right now on 103.7 The Game from former UL All-American Jace Conrad.
Welcome back in. Time to paint this thing vermilion and white. You're listening to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Quickly, we head to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Former UL Raging Cajun, these days putting in work, doing a great job as an insurance and risk advisor for Assured Partners. It is Jace Conrad. How are you, Jace?
Doing well, Ben. Thanks for having me this afternoon.
You know, it's a pleasure. And let's get to the development concerning Gunnar Leger. That arm, it seems at this point, not ready to withstand regular starters' innings. And so now we know he's going to be in the bullpen. And how about this? He gets a save on Sunday, the lone win at Troy. What do you make out of Gunnar moving to the pen?
Well, you know, we can definitely use him right now in any way, shape, or form. So the fact that he could give us anything, I think, is valuable. As I said, it's better to at least have him out of the bullpen than not have him at all. So I think, you know, whatever opportunity he gets to help the team win, I think he's going to make the most of it. So.
And we know that puts a little bit of a different strain on some of the other guys, right? A Saturday starter moves up to Friday, so forth and so on. But how do you think they perform this weekend? We know they lost a close one Friday, 5-4. It was 10-6 on Saturday. But how about a little bit of a shuffle in the rotation and what it means?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, you know, no matter who's pitching Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, or coming out the bullpen in Gunnar's case, I think that it's that time of the year, and they got to figure out a way to, no matter who's called upon, to execute and to win ball games. We had a couple chances this weekend to take some wins, and we weren't able to finish. Luckily, we were able to finish thanks to Gunnar, you know, that third game. But I think moving forward, I think everyone needs to kind of just not so much worry about where they're throwing and where they're hitting and just find a way to win.
Jace Conrad, our guest, as we're talking Cajuns baseball on 103.7 The Game. I think the next couple of midweeks are interesting, and I'll get your take on this, Jace. Versus Southeastern tomorrow night, at Southeastern Wednesday, so a home and home. And then next week, they've got Louisiana Tech, McNeese, both coming to the Teague. Some pretty good opportunities to stack up wins and get some RPI points in the progress. How do you attack games like this in the midweek?
Yeah, well, first off, it's one game at a time, as you know.
we need to focus one game, one pitch, one inning at a time, and just find a way to put together good nine-inning baseball games. It's been we pitch well, but we're not hitting. Then we hit well, we're not pitching. And then when both of them go right, we're not playing defense. So I think the main focus should be everyone should know their role at this point of the year and just execute. I mean, I'm looking forward to tomorrow night. It's going to be a good game against Southeastern, and we need to get this win.
And in between those four midweek games, a series at home in the Teague, so that's the other part that's cool about this, Jace, is suddenly you look up, you've got six of your next seven that are at home, but it's the Arkansas State Red Wolves. What can you tell us about that team and the challenges they present?
Well, you know, the thing is, I think most important thing is, you know, we're going to need to get the fans behind us, and I think, you know, at this point in the season, once again, it's tough, our record being where it is, but if I recall correctly, I think 2015 it was, the year after I left, they had a similar record to this and ended up making a nice little postseason run. So I think it's important, as hard as it is, because I've played on teams that weren't doing so hot in the middle of the season. I think the important thing is to be able to just forget about what's happened and try and get hot at the right time. I was talking to Tyler Girard yesterday, and he's the one that kind of brought that up to him. And he said, you know, all it takes is one spark and one good game to get this team rolling and to get this team going, you know, leading into the second half of the season. So I'm looking forward just to kind of seeing how we respond. It's really going to test us. It's going to tell us who we are and what we're made of. So I'm looking forward to that.
Cajuns currently stand at 13-16, 4-5 in the Sun Belt. Jace, who would you identify as leaders on this team that whether they do it by example with their play or you know that they're vocal inside of the dugout, in the locker room, who are some of the guys that will help them turn this around?
Well, I think the main one's going to be Gunnar Leger, whether he is available to pitch or not, because whenever Gunnar's involved in any way, shape, or form, the guys around him tend to respond in a positive way. So I know Gunnar well, and I know he's doing what he can right now to get this team back on track. So I'm hoping that he recovers, you know, from throwing yesterday and can in some way, shape, and form be a presence out there on the field again for this upcoming week. Him, Hayden Cantrell swinging the bat well, I think it's important for him to continue that. And then overall, I hope some other guys can step up because unfortunately in this game it's going to take more than one or two people.
Jace Conrad has been with us on 103.7 The Game. For our listeners tuning in right now, I'm sure they'll see you over the next week and a half out there at Teague Moore Field at Russo Park.
Yeah, they will. I'll be looking forward to going out there hopefully tomorrow night and then this weekend. So,
and that is Jace Conrad. Mondays he joins us in the 5 o'clock hour. His day job, where you need to contact him, he's with Assured Partners, an insurance and risk advisor with that firm. Jace, thanks again for the time. We'll catch up soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Ben.
And Clint, I'll get your take on that before we wind down this segment. They're not out of reach for a lot of things. They're not inspiring a ton of confidence. Troy was fair to middling at best,
yeah,
especially in league play going into this weekend. At 4-5 in the Sun Belt, they're not out of range to do some pretty cool things. I'm not ready to say remarkable. I'm not ready to say postseason worthy. But if they can catch a little bit of fire with this home run that they've got coming, I mean, 6 out of 7 we just mentioned at home, they've got a chance to really move this in the right direction. I say that knowing full well that LSU loses 3 or 4 in a row and the sky is falling. So it feels like the standard is different, and I understand that. But it can change pretty quickly for this Cajuns program.
It really can change, but it's all coming down to this weekend series because they're playing a really good Arkansas State program. I believe I just saw they were ranked 29th amongst the top 30 teams in the country earlier today. And that's saying something with an Arkansas State program that's on the rise. They could wind up being it's almost like I'm going to compare it to what we saw this past weekend with LSU Mississippi State. Arkansas State seems to be on the rise. If you can take 2 out of 3 against a really good team in Arkansas State, win that first Sun Belt series, you can wind up instilling a lot of confidence in that team, and especially in those young guys who are just starting to get some chops because of a lot of the injuries they've had to deal with throughout the season.
And in some ways, believe me, not every way, the series at home against Arkansas State can register a little bit like LSU's opportunity they just had and pass it with flying colors at Mississippi State, right? And so when you have that big series looming out of the distance, things aren't going quite so well. You could turn it around, but it's going to take some work. And they're going to have to do it without Gunnar Leje at the top of the pitching rotation. Looks like he might find a home at the back end of the Raging Cajuns bullpen. All right, we'll take our final break of the hour. We got a lot coming at you, though. When we return, I want to give you an update on John Calipari, and then I'm going to throw some shade at a fan attending the game Cal coached in yesterday. Plus, a picture that should be worth at least $1,000, even if it's not worth 1,000 words. Yeah, we got all that coming at you. Then Glenn Gilbo at 6 o'clock and Galen Alexander at 6:15. Loaded and ready to roll on a Monday. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
Let's go! Let's go, baby!
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
You know, I just humbled and blessed. It's an honor to even be on the floor with those programs. And then when you play, your kids play hard and play unselfishly and play together. You know, obviously they're the Cinderellas of this tournament, and that's what makes March so special. Which team is it going to be?
An honor to be on the floor with Kentucky, and yet Bruce Pearl and Auburn dragged them up and down when it mattered the most, and they're going to the Final Four. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. I know Bruce Pearl isn't a beloved figure in this neck of the woods. A lot of people think, and I don't believe that it's synonymous, Bruce Pearl didn't talk to his employer. He's in the Final Four. Will Wade didn't talk to his. He's indefinitely suspended. It's not apples to apples. There's not a wiretap of one to start. But then let's be honest as well. Do you believe that Will Wade on the sideline would have made a difference in the LSU-Michigan State game to the tune of whatever was required? You know, like 17 more points? I don't. I think LSU played arguably the best, hottest team in this tournament right now. But Auburn, they could lay claim to some of that. And that was Bruce Pearl discussing beating Blue Bloods to get exactly where they're going. And that, to me, a very interesting notion, because the team he beat, its head coach, we have found out in the last couple of hours, will be sticking around, not Blue Blood territory, but Blue Grass country for a lifetime. John Calipari confirms he has agreed to a lifetime contract with the Kentucky Wildcats. No term specified except for the fact that he'll coach as long as he wants, and when he doesn't want to coach anymore, he'll be an advisor to UK basketball. Wow. All this in response to the fact that within the last 12 to 18 hours, UCLA asked Kentucky for permission to speak to Cal. It was granted. They offered him, as is being reported, 6 years, $48 million. UCLA did, and boom, a few moments later, lifetime contract. Now that I've discussed Auburn, now that I've discussed Kentucky, I'm about to discuss one of the most conspicuous figures that attended their game yesterday. Hold that thought. I'm getting right back to it. First, your daily reminder. It's a PSA locally that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the customized patio covers with the cypress accents, and the standing seam metal awnings. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home. Alex will be the one to put up your shades and your awnings while Todd installs your patio covers and those gorgeous customizable screen rooms. Collectively, the team at Patio Center, they're ready to up your patio game. All it takes to start, a trip to patiocenter.com. The kings of customization, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center.
Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
I kept you blindfolded from this one, partner. I wanted to hit you with it on live radio. Please tell me. Well, first off, did you watch the Kentucky-Auburn game yesterday?
Yes, I did.
Please tell me that you saw the dude in the old school LSU Shaq jersey that was standing basically in the aisle.
Yeah.
If you're watching in the second half, it was the side that Auburn was going toward. It was toward the Auburn bench. Please tell me that you saw that guy.
Yes, I did.
What in the hell was that guy doing? Now, follow me for a second here.
Okay.
Follow me. It's one thing to wear the jersey of a team or player that you support to a game where that team's not involved. I support that, right? If you want to either kind of be the troll or you just want to say, hey, I rep these colors, screw you guys. I get all that.
Yeah.
But dude was actively rooting for Auburn. If you watched him, every time they did something toward the end of the game, it wasn't like a knee-jerk reaction. Ooh, look. Shiny balloon, let's follow it. No, he was only cheering when good things happened for Auburn. I watched this with my uncle yesterday, and we were mesmerized. Guy was wearing a throwback 33 O'Neal LSU jersey. Gold jersey, purple lettering and numbers, and the white trim. Old school Shaq in LSU, and was actively rooting for Auburn. Which leads me to a lot of questions. Mostly shade, but also questions. Was this individual confused? Is he really an Auburn fan? Did somebody slip him the LSU jersey? Like a Mickey? Did he not know what was going on? Like, what was going through this individual's mind? Wearing the LSU throwback jersey and rooting for Auburn. Again, if you watched the game yesterday, you could not miss this guy. First, he was wearing all gold. Second, he was basically in the aisle, maybe like four or five rows up for Bruce Pearl and the Auburn bench. I watched that yesterday, and I was stupefied. It could have also been a Will Wade just sit-in, I guess, as it were. I don't know what the dude was thinking, but he was out of place.
I mean, the dude was definitely out of place. I mean, it would have made more sense if he was at the Duke-Michigan State Elite Eight matchup, considering the fact that was in Washington, D.C.
Cat had a ticket, didn't want to leave, was going to rub his colors in people's face.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but
not,
instead,
not he was in Kansas City rooting for Auburn. I've never in my life ever seen somebody wearing LSU gear rooting for Auburn at a game that LSU wasn't involved in. Of course, I guess it'd be a little weirder if he was in LSU gear rooting for Auburn to beat LSU.
I think that person would not make it out of the stadium with that jersey.
But yesterday was like the Matrix of weird, all right, with this guy. I still don't understand it, but it was hilarious. Here's your part two, and this one will be brief. Have you noticed that Nike has made a pretty kick-ass ad with Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry?
Yeah, I watched it. I watched it. It was pretty cool.
As much time as you've spent on Twitter. I know you've seen it. That was it was rhetorical. It was rhetorical.
Yeah.
Do you notice the picture at the end that they come to? They're standing around with their shirts off. I know where they were because I was there when the picture was taken. They're at the Ponderosa, and they're at LSU camp. And they're holding up the L's, shirtless. Shea Dixon took that picture. And Twitter has just been exploding today with all kind of people asking, Shea, did they break you off for this? Shay, where's the money? Shay, is the check in the mail? Trust me, I know, Shay, there was no money received from this. So, Nike, you think you got problems with the dude that's trying to blow up your grassroots AAU circuit? You might have problems with me and Shay. We're coming after you tomorrow, all right, on Flip the Script. Guns blazing, we're coming at you. Royalties to Shay Dixon. Pay that man his money.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Freaking international shoe campaign using a Shea Dixon photo. No credits anywhere. Yeah. No royalties received. Just getting screwed out there. And just plagiarism as plagiarism gets.
Exactly. I mean, Nike didn't like go on their Twitter and see that post and just, instead of just saving the image, be like, hey, Shay, can we use this for a multi-million-dollar ad campaign?
And that's a little different, isn't it, than the normal one that says, at ESPN front desk or at ESPN PR, we'd like to use this photo for our broadcast tonight. No. We'd like to use this photo for a multi-million-dollar ad campaign.
Exactly. You know, at least be the right guy in the situation. Be like, you know, we're going to ask permission to use this. Nope. Just take it. Just blatant plagiarism from Nike on the part of Shea Dixon.
From caviar to cashews. That's the kind of crap that can happen when you take Shea Dixon's photos and you don't attribute. But you know what? Attribution's one thing. Payment would be quite another. So we're throwing shade at the swoosh company for getting after our guy Shea Dixon. Also at the dude in the Shaq LSU jersey. Somebody else had to have seen that yesterday. We could talk about it later in our 6 o'clock hour, but we are locked and loaded for the final hour of today's show. I know, the full three-hour Monty today. We're going to have to stretch ourselves. Lately, LSU basketball, baseball, coming up pretty soon, Astros baseball. Clinton's going to let us off the hook. We won't do three-hour shows each and every day, but today we get that good fortune, and I'm pumped up about our guest list in hour number three, Glenn Gilbo, coming aboard to begin the 6 o'clock hour. He's been in D.C. all weekend long. He's returned to Baton Rouge. Will Wade is still the coach at LSU. I'm going to see if he's surprised and then what he expects next for a program that enjoyed quite a bit of success in the 2018-19 season. So G-Squared, Glenn Gilbo coming up on the other side of our hour break, and a regular guest of the program returns for the first time in a while at 6:15, pumped up to bring Galen Alexander back on the show. He just led Jones County Junior College in points per game, rebounds per game, and he's now a commitment to the Georgetown Hoyas. How'd he end up there? Is he looking forward to going to play with former Madison Prep star Josh LeBlanc? Just what's that journey been like for a young man that prepped at Bro Bridge and then LCA? Don't go anywhere. We got the goods, and we're coming right back with them. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, front and center on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Here we go. Ready to roll with hour number three. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. For the next hour, we got you inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Don't forget, when we're done, the Paul Mineri Show beginning at 7 o'clock. We'll leave the LSU baseball talk for later. Right now, time to get back to LSU hoops. Aboard the ARTCO Equipment Hotline, he probably just got in his flight from Washington, D.C. It's our good friend Glenn Gilbo with the Daily Advertiser. GG, how's that jet lag going?
Hey, Ben, I'm actually driving to Baton Rouge from the New Orleans airport right now. It was it ended badly for LSU, but it was a great weekend of basketball and baseball in D.C.
You know, I forgot about that, but I believe I saw it on social media. Did you get to catch a Nats game before you left town?
I did. The Nats played the Mets at 1:35 Sunday, and I was staying right near the stadium. So I went and watched about 6 innings of that game and then took the subway to the basketball arena. So it was a great doubleheader, and the basketball game was awesome.
That's a heck of a sports weekend. Glenn Gilbo, our guest on 103.7 The Game. All right, you were there in the aftermath of LSU's loss to Michigan State. What sense did you take away from the players, Coach Tony Benford, about the future direction of this team and this program?
Well, I mean, it was clear that, you know, the players don't know what's next. I mean, that's obvious. I don't think anybody really knows what's next. I would really doubt it if Coach Wade returns, or if they want him to return. And then, I think they probably got to look at hiring a head coach not from the current staff, and hopefully keeping the current staff or some members of it. And the main thing Joe Oliva and staff should be doing is trying to keep reassure the players and try to get as many players as possible to stay, regardless of who the next coach is.
Glenn, we spoke briefly off air, and I think you know my position. I'm a little surprised that the axe hasn't fallen yet on Will Wade, and for that exact reason you just mentioned. I think anything you could do to keep the current players, the current team intact, find a new head coach, and just know what the direction is going forward, I think you have to do that. Do you see it that way, or do you think this might drag out a while?
Well, you know, again, I don't know. I mean, I don't think anybody knows, but I think they might want to wait and see what happens in the trial. That's still a few weeks away. You know, if they can keep – I mean, you're going to have some players leave even if Wade was returning and everything was hunky-dory, like Naz Reid would probably be leaving. He's a first-round pick. Tremont Waters might be leaving, though I don't think his future's in the NBA. But, you know, so it's going to be hard to get a coach anyway because of the dark clouds from the FBI investigation, NCAA investigation. So maybe they'll just wait to see what happens in the trial before, you know, they fire a coach based on a story. I mean, it's a very proven and well-documented story by some of the greatest writers out there, and Pat Forty and Pete Thamel, but, you know, maybe to be prudent, they ought to kind of wait to see what happens in the trial and then go from there. So that'll be a few weeks.
Talking the future of LSU Hoops with Glenn Gilbo, you need to follow him on Twitter, at LSUBeatTweet. Do you have a gut feel on if this will have an impact on Joe Oliva, F. King Alexander, and their futures in their current positions?
Well, I think Joe Oliva might be leaving anyway. I mean, he's in the last year of his contract. No, I don't think it's going to affect the president. You know, this is, I mean, really, this is all Will Wade, I think. I think the president and Oliva have done the right thing in suspending Wade. So I know Oliva's unpopular, but, you know, it's kind of the fans are acting kind of crazy lately, I believe. I don't think their future is going to be affected by this Will Wade situation, no.
Glenn, just from all of your time around the LSU Board of Supervisors, and we know it's a cast of characters that can rotate, but is it difficult for them to sometimes come to an accord when it comes to what they want to do, what they need to do in situations like this?
Yeah, they tend to have trouble doing that, for sure. I mean, you know, Joe Oliva wanted to fire Les Miles after the 15 season, and he couldn't get it done, and you know, there was a lot of indecision and infighting there. And, you know, that's kind of the MO of LSU. They can't seem to be on the same page and to keep everything amongst themselves. So what happens is it just becomes a big mess, you know. But I think LSU's done the right thing in this basketball situation. I mean, you know, they wanted to, they didn't really want to suspend Will Wade, and they probably don't want to fire him, but it's almost like he's backed him into a corner by his behavior, by not meeting with anyone, and this ridiculous constitutional right statement he had, which makes no sense. And I think he's got bad advice from his attorney, but he took the advice. And really, I think Wade turned his back on his own players by not even trying to come back. And I think LSU as an institution has done the right things with Wade. I mean, they tried to meet with him, and he didn't want to meet.
Before we let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't pick your brain on, like you said, Glenn, one of the best games we've seen in a while, a regional final between Michigan State and Duke. Give us some of your takeaways from that, the star power, the coaches, and the way it ended.
Well, that Duke Virginia Tech game was great too on Friday, you know, I just think one of the coolest things about the NCAA tournament is people get into these games with no personal or geographical or alumni basis at all. I mean, it's just great games, even if you have no ties to it, and that's what we saw, you know. And I think Duke was really lucky to be here. They lucked out against UCF. They lucked out against Virginia Tech, and their luck ran out against Michigan State. They really didn't perform well late in the game, and Michigan State did. And they were able to pull it out, and it looked like they weren't for a while. But I think in this case the best team won, and it's, I think people get tired of seeing Duke win all the time. I thought it was cool that Michigan State was able to advance.
All right, fair or foul, Glenn, as we let you go, this was a top three LSU basketball team of all time.
Oh, I don't think so. No. I think Dale Brown's two Final Four teams were better, and John Brady's Final Four team was better. I think Brady's Sweet 16 team in 2000 was probably better than this one too. I'd say this was a top five team. The bad thing is you don't know how good they could have been if Will Wade would have stayed on, because then Javonte Smart would have played better. I mean, he just kind of disintegrated after the investigation. But, you know, up through the end of the SEC, I mean, they set the SEC record. I mean, they set the LSU record for SEC wins. It was one of the best teams. But, you know, they didn't finish for some bad reasons. But I wouldn't put them up with some of those other teams, no.
We enjoy his opinions, and we really appreciate all the reporting. Glenn Gilbo, you can read him every day in the Daily Advertiser. Glenn, thanks for doing this on the drive home. Travel safe, my friend.
Okay, thank you.
I completely agree with a number of things he said there. I do think, as I've told you time and again on this program, that Wade backed LSU into a corner. I do think that there has been, and this is understandable, right? I get it. Even though I wouldn't mimic it, I understand it, I guess is what I'm saying. There's been some emotional overreaction by LSU fans about the decision for Oliva and Alexander to indefinitely suspend Wade. They really didn't have a lot of choice. But now is the part where they do have some choice, and it won't affect the season going forward. That's what's interesting to me, is that things are still lingering. If they're going to wait until April 22nd, I think they're making a grave mistake. To keep some of the players that are on the team, to get the next head coach. The only good that could come out of waiting until April 22nd is you believe. I mean, you out and out believe that Wade's going to go through his time. Nothing bad shall pass there, even though, again, he's a material witness. He's not on trial. You think that late April incident with the FBI is going to come, go, Wade will be your coach, it'll be a blip on the radar, and the NCAA is not coming to campus, we're going to ride it out and take our chances. That seems so remote as far as realistic possibilities that are out there. So waiting until then, that's the part where I don't agree with Glenn. That would be an unforgivable sin, in my opinion, if LSU were to wait that long. All right, we're not waiting at all. We're going into our first break of the hour. When we return, fired up to welcome back on Galen Alexander. Just had a heck of a season with Jones County Junior College, and he's head to play. At least he's committed to go play for Patrick Ewing and the Georgetown Hoyas, a local product coming up next. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
And get back to work.
Okay, everyone, let's get back.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
Right back in. You're listening to Bumper Sports on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. You've heard from our next guest a number of times on the program, but he's got a new move that's coming, and I'm excited to catch up with him about everything going on in his life. Let's get out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Former Brobridge Tiger LCA Knight, currently finishing up at Jones County Junior College. Galen Alexander is our guest. Galen, how are you tonight?
I'm good. How you doing?
Look, life is good here, but you've been doing some pretty impressive things. You led your team in scoring, in rebounding. Tell us about the season that was for you at Jones County.
We had a great season. We ended up finishing number one in the conference. We lost in the state championship and the regional championship, but it was a good year for everybody.
I know that March 19th, so not long ago, you committed to Robert Kirby, Patrick Ewing, and the Georgetown Hoyas. What went into that decision?
Just my relationship with Coach Kirby and Coach Ewing. Like I said, I signed with Coach Kirby at LSU, so me and him already had a relationship for over 5 or 6 years now. So just building on that, he's somebody I could trust. He's somebody I look up to. He's like a mentor to me. So it was really an easy decision for me.
Talking with Galen Alexander on 103.7 The Game. You mentioned the relationship with Coach Kirby. What have you gotten to know so far about Patrick Ewing and his style?
He liked to play up-tempo basketball. He real tough. He pride himself on defending. So that's why I'm going to come in that on the team. He need me to come in and be that playmaker that they need right away and just step up and help the team in every way possible.
And you'll get a chance to play, as you're well aware, with Josh LeBlanc, who was at Madison Prep. What's he told you about that Hoyas program? And I guess what have you observed about the way that he goes about his business up there?
Yeah, that's my brother. Me and Josh, we real close. We've been close since I was in high school. So I was up there this weekend, and we just talked a little bit about, you know, everything that's going on, you know, what to look forward to coming into the season and stuff like that. So I think it's going to be a big year for both of us.
Galen, what's the difference in coming up through the high school ranks as a recruited player and then having to do it in a different way going back to the JUCO ranks? What's different about those two?
High school, the competition is a lot different. You come from playing, you might play a team with one Division I player or some even no Division I players on their team. And then playing Division One and JUCO, you know, everybody can play out here in Mississippi. It's a tough league. It's a lot of great players in Mississippi, a lot of great teams. So definitely the competition level is a lot different. It's a lot tougher, too.
Got another few moments with Galen Alexander. I mentioned he led Jones County Junior College in scoring a little more than 17 points a game and rebounding almost 8.5 boards. Galen, if somebody who saw you in high school were to watch you play today, what would be the most improved aspect of your game?
Definitely my shooting. I'm shooting it the best I ever shot it. And that's catch and shoot threes, pull-up threes, mid-range pull-up. I've just been shooting it well all together. I've been playing with a lot more pace, with a better motor. And I owe that to my junior college coach, Randy Bowden.
And what is go ahead, I'm sorry.
That's it.
Well, what's the process for you now? I know that you committed back on March 19th, so between now and reporting, what's life going to be like?
I didn't hear you. Can repeat that for me?
What comes between now and when you get up to Washington, D.C.? What's the process like of finishing JUCO and then getting to school at Georgetown?
I'm finishing junior college. I'm going to be getting my associate's degree. But right now I'm just working. We're trying to get ready for that next level.
And I would love to hear your reaction, Galen, to Brobridge winning the Class 4A state championship. That had to be a pretty cool moment for you.
Yeah, that was great. That was great for the city. We needed that one. Yeah, they deserved it for sure.
I mean, tell us about some of the influence and, I guess, friends, family maybe that you had in that program on that team.
It was a lot of great players that came through Brobridge in the past years. Nobody got it done. So they're the first ones to ever get it done. My younger brother plays on that team, so it was just good to see them, you know, actually do something and make history. But I have two cousins and my younger brother that played for that team.
I'm not going to lie to you. I remember seeing his face from all those games when you were at LCA, and then I saw him suiting up over in Lake Charles a couple of weeks ago, and it blew my mind a little bit, man. So I'm glad to see that he's out there doing that, and he was part of a team, like you said, that broke through, man. I just think that's so cool.
Yeah, he's been doing good, man. He's finding himself. he's starting to find himself as a player, and he's been getting a lot better. He's real athletic, real tough, strong, scrappy. So he's going to be good over the years.
Great time catching up with Galen Alexander. Again, congrats on the commit, and good luck as you continue grinding and get to the nation's capital. Look forward to watching your next step at Georgetown. Thank you, Galen.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Got to love it, right? It's a completely different monster to tackle, to get recruited from the JUCO level, even when you are 6'6 and some change like Galen is, right? Even if you are as athletic as they come, and trust me, on the JUCO level, Galen will be a top 5 to 10 percenter when it comes to athleticism. But you got to refine your weakness. And so when you hear him say shooting, he's not lying. I mean, based off a report I saw from a Georgetown 247 site, Galen at the JUCO level this past year shot 52.9% from the field. That's a big leap forward, and it's not all happening from point-blank range, right? Right? You can't. It's not just catch, square up, bank it from 4 feet and closer. So I saw that he shot more than 35%, better than 35% from three as well. So had a lot of time calling games that Galen played in back in the day. Have had him on this show probably now 3 or 4 times. It's great to run him down. CD, I'm going to tell you this, and hopefully this won't be a complete tease for you and our listeners. I had it on my mind when I woke up this morning. I said, you know what? I'm going to try and get 3 current college basketball players on the show. Okay. I figured they wouldn't all happen today. Number one was Galen Alexander. Okay, that one did happen today. No, and it'll be at Georgetown next year. Number two, Corey Davis.
Ooh.
Houston Cougars. Unfortunately, they bowed out in a hell of a game in the Sweet 16 to Kentucky. There are NCAA rules that prohibit some of these kids that just finished their season. Basically, they get a week off and well-deserved. But if everything works out right, next Monday on the program, Lafayette High's own Corey Davis will be joining B2BS. The third, and I have to be honest here, once I got the answer for Corey Davis, I said, okay, I'm not sure it's going to happen. If I get to Chris Mullin, I say, hey, I need Greg Williams Jr. for a little bit. I'm not sure how well that's going to go, so maybe I'll let that breathe for a week as well. So I woke up, kind of had it on my mind. I said, we're going to get as many of these college kids as we can. Check with Galen Alexander. And it's great to have him back. It's great to see that he is back. I know the relationship with Robert Kirby is what in large part is going to get him to Georgetown. But tell you what, you carry a lot of talent if you can get to LSU and Georgetown on scholarship.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's definitely a great spot for him. It's going to be fun to see what he winds up doing.
But I'm hoping that within the next week to week and a half of the program, I'm looking for Greg Williams Jr., and I'm looking for Corey Davis. So if we could find a way to bat 1,000,
yeah,
even if it took an extra week, all good in the hood with that. Now, Greg got to dip a toe in this year to NCAA tournament play. St. John's was in the play-in game. Didn't go so well for the Storm. But he got to play in the big dance. That's the start. Corey Davis not only got to play for the second straight year in the big dance, he was, let's just go out and say it, I think Corey Davis probably was one of the 5 to 10 most productive two-way players in all of the NCAA tournament when you consider what he's done for Kelvin Sampson's team. So we got to bring him back on for the Hub City.
Exactly. I can't wait to hear what he has to say. I know one of his former classmates, Steve Arteague, was talking about him last week during press conferences, saying how he's just happy to see like the amount of Lafayette High alumni kind of showing out in a big way on the college spotlight.
We had one on the program today.
There we go.
Jace Conrad joining us. We're about to go to the Beaver Club Relays this weekend. Mondo Duplantis. In fact, we may have to see, and this is not even a joke, it might be time for his sister to come on the program. We'll see if we line that up for the Beaver Club Relays. So, yeah, we got some Lafayette High influence. We just had some Brobridge / LCA influence. We keep it as local as we can because that's what we do. Half an hour left to play. You could join the show whenever you're ready. 706-0111. I want to get back into the Final Four, and we'll see if we don't find a little time for LSU baseball conversation too. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we will return on 103.7 The Game.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits.
Seriously, we've tried before.
Cork. Now the tape.
Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Two straight guests, now two straight segments to take your phone calls. Let's get you to 7 o'clock and bring you home. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. You want to react? We got time. 706-0111. In fact, we're heading out now to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Dr. C, welcome to the show. What you got for us?
Hey, Ben. It's nice to talk to you. I love your show every evening driving back from work. Excuse me. I kind of disagree with you in regard to with the scenario, best scenario for Will Wade as in the LSU's point of view. Number one is that I think they have to wait for the trial because, as like always, it's all about the Benjamins, because they have to fire him for just cause. If they don't fire him for just cause, or suppose something, they fire him now and they find out something was, you know, amiss and it was a false story or something, then he could, you know, demand the money even if he was fired. So there's about $9 million on the table right now. And what LSU needs to do, is what they're waiting to do, is to see if the trial documents what we think it is that, you know, there were some improprieties that were done, and therefore he will be fired for just cause. Otherwise, he won't. And what's out there still is that Dawkins may cop a plea deal, and if he does, all that information is buried forever. And then it's another scenario that can take place that, you know, we don't know about, and maybe LSU would get away with what's happened. But that's my take on it.
Well, Dr. C, no, this is good. No, hold on. Clint, look, keep him there. This is good because you're right. There are about $9 to $10 million on the table here in terms of a buyout, and
right.
The operative phrase, and you're right, is termination with cause. Termination with right. just cause. And where I think there's some gray area right now, and I'm not about to dive into this as a non-attorney, but I look at the situation, and could you say that he's already violated his moral and ethics clause? Boy, I don't know if I'd be willing to bet $9 or $10 million on it, but I think he's done some things that put them in peril. I think he's done some things by not reporting to a meeting he was asked to go to. And by the way, I understand why he's not going. Believe me, I get it.
Yeah.
But, man, I would say that they might be able to justify it with cause right now, but I'm sure Wade's attorneys would try and have a field day with that.
Yeah, well, I'm a doctor, and I have my son's a lawyer, and so he kind of helped guide me through this thing. But what he really basically said is that I think when the NCAA was at the meeting, you know, they were set up, that was, you know, a faux pas for Coach Wade, and that's why he didn't want to attend. And then he also felt that, you know, of course, once they were privy to the information, the federal government, FBI, would then, you know, bring in F. King Alexander and also our, you know, our coach, I mean, Joe Oliva. So their strategy was just to keep it just, you know, less people knowing about this true situation as they could be. And then now, just cause will be if he's proven to be have done what he did, and not going to the meeting, he's protected by the federal veil, which he continues to say he can't divulge any information because he's of the courts, you know, the federal investigation has to keep it secret. Which, according to my son, that's kind of how it works. They don't have just cause on him right now. They don't have enough just cause, and if by chance they farm prematurely and, you know, it'd work out a little bit different. LSU would owe him $9 million whether or not they fired him.
Yeah, it'd backfire financially. Dr. C, thank you for listening. Even more thank you for calling today. Thank you, sir.
Bye, buddy. Have a great day, and we enjoy y'all every day and every night. And the game is awesome. Take care. Thank you.
I love that. Probably should have gone down that road long ago on this topic. Probably should have had some attorneys on that want to discuss this. In fact, may do that in the next few days. Because I'll tell you what I led the show off with. I was surprised when I woke up this morning and it hadn't happened yet. That's just honestly how I looked at it. I had been conditioned to believe they didn't want to disrupt the flow of a season in progress. And then not long after it was done, 24 to 48 hours, those were kind of some of the numbers I had been given, just people who know more than me. They expected that this would be a done deal. In fact, the majority of the conversations I've had today still lead me to believe that is what's going to happen. But can they afford to wait until late April? Boy, I still think that's a high-wire, risky game for the future of the program. I could see where people would argue on both sides of the fence there. Are you not willing to wait 3 weeks for the future of the program? Would be the counter to that. And I at least understand. In the big picture, what does 3 weeks mean? If there's a chance you could get Wade back, what does 3 weeks mean? I'm a little too jaded because I still think this thing is too far gone to be pieced back together. Kind of like a lot of people feel about the high school split. It ain't coming back together. It's too far gone. I kind of feel that way about this. But I don't know. Maybe the other side of it is, to Dr. C's point, they don't have just cause to terminate him yet. They don't want to put their 9 to 10 mil on the line. And then, by the way, 9 to 10 mil is how much Wade's attorneys might be able to claim in terms of getting the buyout back. Unjust termination, I'm sure they'd come for a lot more than what the buyout would stipulate. I'm sure they would. They got to get paid too, right? So, you know, this whole thing is, it's continuing to unfold in a way that nobody can guess. The one thing that I don't like is this external appearance that LSU's brass, now they're starting. The clock has begun. Now they're beginning their work. God, they just seem late on everything. And I hope that's not the case. I hope that's just the external appearance. It's not the internal machinations, right? Because they should have been doing more due diligence in October about everything that Wade was recorded to have said. And yes, there was an actual tape on that one, which we have heard, right? This was Wade talking to Dawkins about the big kid that ends up at Florida State. Since then, it's been reporting. It's been the subpoena is coming to Wade and Sean Miller. It's been the latest report on the strong-ass offer to Javonte Smart. And then the follow-up from the mothership, Mark Schlabaugh, right? I've paid kids more than this before. Those are words that I have no reason not to believe because of some of the sources. Make the jokes you want about Pat Forty, Pete Thamel. I'm not putting potholes in those guys. They're getting reliable information from people that have reason to disseminate it to make their clients look more favorable by smearing Wade and LSU. So the whole thing continues to be just absolutely fascinating. The longer this goes, I guess here's what I would tell you. I'll wrap up my thought on this. We'll hit our final break. Today's April 1. Friday's April 5. If we get to next Monday, April the 8th, and Will Wade is still the head coach at LSU, then, and maybe only then, will I accept the notion that, yep, this thing's going the distance and they're waiting until the federal trial. That's not where my mind is now. I still think they're trying to find a way to sever ties, not have to be dragged through the mud. Because the other thing that, again, not being a lawyer, I don't know the answer. Can this man take the fifth? Can he plead the fifth in a couple of weeks in federal trial? Can he plead the fifth? Because then what do you learn? I don't know. I still don't think this has a happy ending for Wade remaining at LSU. I do think this can have a relatively happy ending about the future of LSU's program if they continue to cooperate with anything NCAA related. They did that with Javonte Smart. I think that'll earn them some brownie points. They need as many of those as they can get in their corner. Let's take our final break. It's a good call from Dr. C. We got time for more. 706-0111. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. I'm not saying we always make it simpler, but we keep it interesting on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
Season can't come fast enough.
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
You little...
Luckily, you have Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love to help get you by.
One more time. Here we go. This is B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Are you ready for your surprise of the late afternoon, early evening? Late reports out of college basketball's John Rothstein. Technically, these days he is with CBS Sports. According to his sources, Memphis Grizzlies assistant Jerry Stackhouse is in contract negotiations to become the next head coach at Vanderbilt. Wow. Stackhouse emerged as a primary candidate in the last 24 hours. According to Rothstein, nothing final yet, but the two sides are headed toward a marriage. I did not see that coming. And maybe that leaves Johnny Dawkins available to some other SEC schools, perhaps one in Baton Rouge. However, as Dr. C pointed out, maybe that time hasn't come yet. I still refuse to believe. And believe me, you listen to this show long enough, you know that I will change my mind on things. I like to think I'm flexible enough intellectually to allow that I'm not always right at first. Hard for me to see Humpty Dumpty being put back together with LSU and Wade. But in case it's not, this wouldn't be the worst news in the world. If somebody like Dawkins or some of the other Vandy candidates are now still available for LSU, and by the way, A&M, Arkansas haven't named their man yet, I don't think this is the worst thing in the world. It's a bit of an unknown that would be injected into the SEC, and it kind of would be Vandy's version of what nearby Memphis has done with Penny Hardaway, except for the whole alma mater part. But Clint, that one hit me like a 2x4 right between the eyes. Jerry Stackhouse in line to be the next HC at Vandy.
Yeah, that popped up towards the end of the 5 o'clock hour, and I was amazed by that too. I was just like, Jerry Stackhouse is the choice? Okay, I can get behind that. It was just a little, it was unusual to kind of hear that name because you were talking about at the end of the 4 o'clock hour about Johnny Dawkins being a potential guy, and I'm like, oh, then Jerry Stackhouse comes out of nowhere off the top rope and brings and wants to take over the Vanderbilt job, which again, it's a little weird, but okay.
So how would you rate your performance of relaying that information to me over the last hour? No, I'm just having fun at your expense.
Well, hey, we have like two guests back-to-back, and it's like nowhere near about Jerry Stackhouse.
I know it. Could have fit in a random Jerry Stackhouse question for our guy Galen Alexander, who naturally, you know what? I don't want to insult Galen's historical basketball intellect. He probably knows who Jerry Stackhouse is. Yeah. He's got to admit, it's close.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty close.
I'll put my thinking cap on. Galen was probably a class of 2017 guy. I think he was 2017.
Yeah,
I think he and Brandon Rashal were class of 2017 guys, which means that they were born in probably like 99.
Yeah, I would go that route.
Jerry Stackhouse was definitely playing in the NBA by 99, for sure. Was probably in, I don't know, year 2, 3, or 4 with the Detroit Basketball Pistons. It's going to be my best guess. I'm going to guess in the year that Galen was born that Jerry Stackhouse was in his third year in the league, probably still with the Pistons.
Yeah, he was
with Have you spit out anything on basketballreference.com yet? I know that's where you are.
No, yeah, he was with the Pistons. This was his third year. He spent 3 years with the Sixers. Don't forget that. So year with the Pistons.
This was year two with the Pistons.
Yes, year two with the Pistons.
I was off by a year.
Like his
I said it was probably his third year. Okay, it was fifth overall, but second with the Pistons.
Correct.
I was close. So Galen probably knows who he is, but maybe only if he's had good basketball tutelage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like me. I've never seen Chris Jackson play, but just trust the fact that I grew up knowing about the legend of the man now known as Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I know about World War II. I just wasn't here for that. So now we're going way off the deep end with that. But you can catch what I'm pitching, I would imagine. Jerry Stackhouse, quite possibly the next head basketball coach at Vandy. Boy, is that interesting. All right, let's wind this thing down with a different side of LSU basketball. Tony Benford led this program to and through the opening round of the NCAA tournament. Also got them into a game against Michigan State. From there, pretty clear that they were outmatched. And the biggest thing that I don't think any of us saw coming was Michigan State shooting it from deep. Here is LSU interim coach Tony Benford on what Sparty was able to do from behind the arc.
You know, you got to play the percentages, and what we tried to do, obviously, on Henry, we played off of him a little bit so we could help inside on Tillman, and he hit a couple early. You know, hit that one early and got going. Then Brown came in and hit a couple of threes early, too. And those both of those guys, give them credit, they're good players. I mean, they made plays and hit big shots when they needed to. We made a couple adjustments with the ball screen covers, like Trey said a minute ago. We started switching the ball screens, and so we wouldn't get in the rotation, you know, because the main thing, we had to keep Cassius out of the paint. And, you know, we committed two guys to him, and then that left us vulnerable on the weak side.
And part of being vulnerable on the weak side, part of doubling on Cassius, was LSU was at times naked when it came to the defensive glass. And so, really, the irony of all ironies in this game, LSU has been a dominant offensive rebounding force most of the season. Michigan State was really the one that got after it on the glass. You don't believe me? Listen to Naz Reid, the talented LSU sophomore. He said it was just frustrating what they gave up to State on Michigan State's offensive glass.
It was very frustrating. I mean, we didn't realize it until the second half. They were long rebounds. So, you know, we were going into the charge circle trying to rebound long rebounds, and they were going over our heads and, you know, just missed checkouts and things like that. I mean, they wanted it more, and they got them.
How about a few more from Tony Benford? LSU season comes to an end in the East Regional semifinal. A lopsided loss to Michigan State. It got to four midway through the second half, and from there, Izzo's team really hit the accelerator. Nonetheless, Tony Benford will tell you right here, he's proud of his guys.
First of all, I want to give Coach Izzo and his team a lot of credit. They came out the first half, and they established a really good job establishing the paint, and especially on the glass. We knew it was going to be a game of who can control the glass, and they did a great job in the first half and throughout the game getting on the glass. Proud of my guys. We've had a great run this year through all adversity we've been through. They accomplished a lot, and I'm really proud of these guys.
We'll get one more from LSU's interim coach Tony Benford, and look, he did a good job at times, a borderline great job of keeping this thing on track. I still don't think there's a very good chance that he becomes LSU's full-time head coach in the event that Wade isn't retained. And so while there's uncertainty for Benford about his own future, he tells you here, I think there's uncertainty in general about the future of the program.
I really don't know. We just played a game, and it's a really good basketball team, and, you know, I'm not even really thinking about it right now, to be honest with you.
And in that moment, I'm certain that he wasn't. Today's a different story, though, and I'm sure he wouldn't say this publicly, but Tony Benford, Greg Heyer, Bill Armstrong, that entire staff, and that's one angle we haven't really discussed on today's show, so we'll end it with this thought. How do you think they feel? If Wade's not around, I feel quite certain they won't be either. I'm not sure anybody on this staff will be allowed to remain on this staff if Wade's let go because of, CD, you're going to get your Dennis Reynolds-ism here from Sunny in Philadelphia, because of the implication. If Wade's let go because of recruiting impropriety, you think people on his staff are going to be allowed to stay? I just doubt it. I'm not sure that is LSU showing its best face to the NC2A to try and ward off any kind of future punishment. So there's a lot of uncertainty. It's Monday. It's 6:56 p.m., and Will Wade is still LSU's coach. I've told you since 4 p.m., I'm still a little surprised about that. I've told you since 4, I think it's a mistake to wait until April 22nd. We've had at least one caller saying they may have to. I'm not so sure that's the case, but you can promise we'll continue to dig deeper and pull at the thread until we get to the core of the matter. And I bet it happens sooner than later. A lot of great calls today. A lot of great guests as well. We got to thank Jamie Howard, Ruffin Rodriguez, Jace Conrad, Glenn Gilbo, and Galen Alexander. It is not often, if ever, that we offer up a 5-guest show. Speaks to the fact that we had a lot of quality today. Speaks to the fact that I don't always like talking 3 hours by myself. So I'm glad that we had them. Glad we had the famous Clint D as well. You got the Paul Mainieri Show coming up next. We'll be back at it on a Tuesday at 4. Cody Worsham, LSU basketball season wrap. Shea Dixon, he'll flip the script and will tell Nike, give Shea his damn money for the royalties. He deserves it. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Enjoy your evening. For Clint, I'm Ben. We're out on 103.7 The Game.